It's NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois' judicial system is increasingly being funded by the men and women who find themselves in court. For both civil and criminal cases, fees and fines have been growing, especially in the last decade. Now a task force is out with its examination of the system and recommendations for change. We'll hear from a member of that group in a few minutes, but first, to get the lay of the land, we thought we'd revisit an Illinois Issues in-depth report on the subject. Last year, I looked at the goal of having defendants bankroll Illinois' criminal justice system. In reality, I found many defendants cannot afford to pay and are pushed into a cycle of debt that can make it hard to reintegrate with society. About 2 years ago, a McLean County judge handed down a sentence for drug possession. It was in no way extraordinary. 2 days in jail, 24 months probation, 30 hours community service. All typical for that kind of crime. The $500 base fine was also standard. Ultimately, however, the first-time offender will walk away paying, or owing, more than $3,000. That is typical, too. There are 33 separate line items the offender will have to pay. There's the base fine of $500, plus $100 for the street value of the drugs, $250 for DNA analysis, $350
for the traffic,
$172 for the
$500 for the drug treatment assessment,
$100 for the Illinois State
for the drug
spinal cord injury,
$100
for the drug trauma,
$20
for the prescription drug,
$25
for police drug task force,
$22
for the sheriff,
$30
for the state's attorney, and $600 for probation services. That's 24 months at $25 per month. Grand total, $3,165.50.
It isn't something that a lot of people are aware of until you go through the system and you get the bill at the end.
Dave Olson is a criminologist at Loyola University Chicago.
Really, for the privilege of staying in the county jail on weekends, I've got to pay money for that?
Olson says the growth in fees is partly due to budget pressure on government. There's also a notion that criminals have access to piles of cash. In reality, many, if not most, of the people in the criminal justice system are poor, and Olson says there are often other conditions imposed at sentencing that acknowledge that poverty.
Conditions of your supervision are you pay $1,000 in fines and you actively seek employment. So we're recognizing that you're unemployed, but we're also imposing these financial conditions on you. Do we push you to do things, or do we force your family members to start assuming a burden of your criminal activity by having to support your payment of these fines?
Of course, the policymakers who impose these fees are often doing so with good intentions.
In a suburb of St. Louis on Saturday afternoon, a police officer shot and killed an unarmed.
Died last week shortly after being wrestled to the ground by police.
The officer shooting 50-year-old Walter Scott in the back as he ran away.
The highly publicized series of incidents in which police killed unarmed black men from South Carolina to Ferguson, Missouri, led for a call to equip police with body-worn cameras.
We have to address this today versus waiting for a Ferguson to occur in our own backyards.
Kim Lightford's a Democratic state senator from Maywood in the south suburbs of Chicago.
Body cameras are a tool that can give us an eye into the truth of what actually happens between officers and suspects.
But when Lightford and her colleagues were drawing up the legislation to equip Illinois' thousands of police officers with cameras, they knew it would be expensive. And it's not like the state has cash to spare. So lawmakers decided to increase the fees paid by people convicted of crimes and traffic offenses. The fee hike would have meant an additional $175 for the McLean County offender, whose costs we totaled earlier. The problem is fines and fees can go up and up, but that doesn't mean offenders are any more able to pay. Olson, the Loyola criminologist, says eventually some things get squeezed.
The money is going to go for the body cameras and not for the domestic violence fund, or it's going to go for the body cameras but not the police training and standards boards. There's kind of a fixed amount you're going to get.
Records of that McLean County drug case show that at the time of sentencing, the offender had already paid nearly $1,000 towards fines and fees. The county applied much of that money towards its own operations, but the state police crime lab had yet to be reimbursed. And the fund for research into spinal cord injury paralysis? It was still awaiting its $5. I'm Brian Mackey. I filed that report last year. Fast forward to last month, and the Statutory Court Fee Task Force has released a list of recommendations to the Illinois Supreme Court and General Assembly. The group was made up of lawyers, judges, and legislators from both parties, including State Representative Elaine Nekritz. A Democrat from Northbrook, she's also chairwoman of the House Judiciary Civil Law Committee. I caught up with Nekritz last week in a meeting room just off the floor of the Illinois House. As far back at least as 1991, in the annual report of the Illinois courts, the Chief Justice at that time was complaining and fretting about the fees that were multiplying in the state of Illinois. Can you talk a little bit about what did you find out about how are fees applied? People get a traffic ticket, it's $75. They could end up walking away from court paying well more than $200, right?
We did a really deep dive into the fees and fines with regard that are tacked on for criminal defendants, whether they're going to court or not, and it was really stunning to me the mishmash of fees and fines that the legislature has imposed over the last 10 years. They're located all over the statutes, so there's not one place where you can find them. They are applied in a myriad of ways, and some of them are so, I hesitate to say this, but they're so poorly drafted that the clerks of the court can't figure out what they're to apply to. So there was a whole host of reasons as we dug into this that we said, we need to really rewrite the whole thing and rethink how we're doing this and how the General Assembly is approaching these fees and fines.
Can you talk a little bit about how some of these come about? I checked, and the body cam legislation last year, for example, included an increase in the criminal traffic conviction surcharge. That's something that had broad support. Most people in the House, including yourself, voted for that. And I imagine if we went back and looked at the spinal cord paralysis fee and all these other little fees that have been tacked on over the year would have had broad support. Is it just that people didn't really stop to consider the aggregate of what was happening here?
I think that since we have been in financial difficulty, one of the easiest things for us to do is to look to citizens that don't have a lobby down here in Springfield, that are unsympathetic, as criminal defendants can be, and to look and to say, well, this is kind of this is something related to the judicial system or the criminal justice system. So let's just, and we need to pay for it. So let's just tack a small fee on, and no one will really notice. And I think that's true that no one really did notice. I don't think we had really any idea the overall magnitude of the fees and fines. And one of the ones that I remember was our state police auto fleet was very, very old, hundreds of thousands of miles on the cars, and how are we going to pay for new police cars? So what do? We tacked another fee onto criminal defendants and to traffic offenses and went that route rather than trying to find a more comprehensive way to pay for it out of general revenue. And again, it's a really good cause. We want our state police to have new cars and the best equipment. And no one was down here saying, well, you can't charge those people that fee. There's no one saying that. So it's a very easy path to take.
So what are some of the recommendations coming out of this group? And I mean, this is something that's going to take both legislative and potentially court action to try and walk back from this. Is that even a goal, to walk back from this system?
So we struggled with that as a commission, is, you know, how much was it, could we walk back, and how feasible was that politically? Because obviously someone's going to be losing money when we do that. But we decided that we really had to, because it had gotten out of control, the fees and fines were too high, and we had to do something about that. So we set about how to do that. We didn't have to make some of those very difficult political decisions, so we decided, you know, many ways that we would just make a recommendation and then let the political process take it from there. I think one of the most significant things we did, it was to take all of the fees and fines, and they're in my recollection is they're in either 12 or 15 different places in the statute, and put them all in the same place. So we would create a single statute dealing with fees and fines for criminal defendants and traffic offenses. Then secondly, we set the amount of the fee for each particular type of offense. We said, this is the amount of fees and fines that someone can expect to pay, and this is how it's going to be divvied up between the various people that are currently receiving it. Our hope is that that will do It will make it predictable for the citizenry. They can actually go someplace in the statute and see what they're going to be paying if they commit an offense. And secondly, we hope it will be a deterrent to the General Assembly to continually raise the fees and fines, because now you know what that total is. And if you file a bill to increase it, you know, someone can say, hey, that's just out of line. So we're hoping that just having it be very clear and understandable will make it harder for the General Assembly to continually tack those things on.
But it's not necessarily going to be the case that a $75 traffic ticket will now be a $75 ticket, or at least for the total, the bottom line that somebody walks out of a court. Those little things that are in there could stay on there.
The underlying fine for the offense will still have not a whole lot of relationship to the amount of the fees that get tacked on. They'll still be, in some ways, much more significant, but they will be less than what they are today for most either traffic offenses or crimes. And what we found out, one of the interesting things we found out is for the most serious offenses, for murder and rape and those kinds of things, there are pretty significant fines, but they're never collected. The court never collects them. And even the fees and fines that we tack on, those don't get collected either. So for the most part, it's traffic offenses. And that was where we tried to be diligent about making sure that the fee that we were imposing bore some relationship to the underlying offense.
One of the other things that came up was this idea of, how do you prioritize? Does the clerk get their fee before the spinal cord injury fund or the body cam fund gets its fee? Is that something that's been looked at now?
We did, and there what we did was we said we're going to stop those priorities, and if the fee is $400, here's how it's allocated between those various interest groups, and everybody knows exactly what their share is, and it, unless the General Assembly goes back in and changes it, it stays that way. And so everyone can have a little bit more predictability about the dollars that they're going to be receiving.
One of the last things I want to ask you about is there's this philosophical idea where we talked a little bit earlier about who is the user of the criminal justice system. Is it the person who is the defendant in the system, or is it the rest of us? And that's a question that I heard asked of me. Is that something? Do you have any thoughts on that? Did the commission or committee have any?
The committee did spend some time thinking about that philosophical question of, if you're filing a lawsuit on the civil justice side, you are affirmatively asking the courts to do something. When you're a criminal defendant, you're not there by your choice. And so how much should we ask those criminal defendants to pay for a system that really is for public safety, it's for justice, there's a whole host of reasons for that we operate the criminal justice system. And we came to the conclusion that we probably can't end the requirement right now that they pay, but we can try to reduce it and make it more rational and more understandable. And that was really where we ended up and what we tried to do.
Elaine Nekritz is a Democratic state representative from Northbrook. She's chairwoman of the House Judiciary Civil Law Committee and was a member of the Statutory Court Fee Task Force. This is NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey.